listening to the music tonight and listening to the scripture about how can we sing, I want to take you back to that moment where the Israelites were in captivity, and they were being made to do horrible things. They were slaves in a foreign country, and they were pining away for the good old days. They were sitting by the waters of Babylon, thinking of Zion, thinking of Jerusalem, and they were mourning their losses. And their captors then, about that time, say, well, sing us a song. Sing us, come on. Sing and dance for us. Sing us a song. And the words are, how can we sing? How can we possibly sing? Here we are in captivity. Here we are in bondage. How can we sing? And it says that they were crying, that they were weeping beside this river. They were weeping there, and they were remembering the good old days, when the good old days were so good old, and when they were so wonderful. And then they're asked to sing, and their question is, how can we sing? I have been through, being 62 years of age, I have been through a number of bondage situations. I've been through a number of years, of decades, of hurt, of anxiety, of fears, of unworld things, unbelievable things, unfathomable things. In the 60s, I lost a child, an infant son, my grandfather, and my mother. In the 70s, I had the incredible experience of having what some of you know about, and that is TMJ. It's temporomandibular joint stress dysfunction. It's where your jaw joints simply do not work. And I don't want to hear one single person make a crack about, she wore her mouth out. Ha, isn't that funny? But the joint is so is so dysfunctional that it produces incredible pain. And I had 10 years of that. Then the 70s came along. And the 80s came along, and I went through a disastrous divorce. Then the 90s came, late in 1991, my husband and I went through an automobile accident. I broke my neck and my back, and it took me almost a year to recover from that. And then last year, 93, I discovered that I have cancer. It's an interesting question. How can we sing? And I'm not saying that my liturgy here, those 60s, 70s, and 80s, and now 90s, is worse than anything you might be handling. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just giving you a record, an account of the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and now the 90s. And how can I sing? And I read that verse in the Psalms, the 137th, and I see those people in my head, and I hear them. And I hear them pining for the good old days. And I hear them, and their heart's cry is, how can we sing? We've hung our harps and our lyres on the trees and on the branches of the willows. In other words, we packed away the instruments. We've taken away the drums and the pianos and the sound equipment. We put it all away. We've sent it to storage because how in the world can we sing? And I hear some anger in that from them. How are we expected to sing? And I pick up these vibes from my own life, and I pick up them from your lives. As I talk with people across the United States and in many, many places, in many different situations, I hear you saying to me, how am I supposed to be able to sing? How am I supposed to read that music that was up there and mouth those words and sing those words? You don't know what I'm going through. We could say to the musicians on the platform tonight, that's really good about you. You're really good. You can sing those songs. But I can't. You don't know what's going on in my life. How can I possibly sing? In my brief time with you, I would like to share with you the fact that there are three factors that allow us to sing. And not just piddly singing, but joyously. From the diaphragm, from way down here, as every singer knows, with great gusto, with with full voice, as we would say, as a musician, we would say full voice. Or she's in great voice tonight, or he's in good voice tonight. Or if you've heard Pavarotti or anybody else sing in the opera, in the world of opera, you know that some nights they're not really on to it. Some nights their voices just aren't up to it. But how can we sing and have full voice? How can we sing and know that the song is coming from way down here? That we don't even have to work at it. That we don't have to try and remember the words. That the words will come. The words are there. And we can sing from the depths of our hearts and the depths of our souls. I believe there are three factors. And of course, the first factor that you knew I would say is God. I believe that God, in his infinite way, in his unconditional love, in his unconditional acceptance of us, God helps us to begin the song. It's just the prelude. And at first, it's very hard to sing. At first, our notes are sort of stumbling, and we're looking around for the right key. Let's see, does it start here, or does it start down here? And God begins to mold the vocal cords within us, and he begins to tell us that we are precious to him. After the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and then into the 90s, when I was in the 80s and I was going through the divorce, I really believed that I would never, ever be used again by him. I believed my ministry was finished. I believed I would never write another book again. I believed no one would ever ask me to come to their church and speak in their church, that no one had asked me to ever sing another song again. And I believed that because the voices of criticism are so loud. Have you remembered in your childhood where you had one teacher who told you you were really stupid? And how am I going to, I told you 16, 29 times how to do this, and you're so stupid you don't get it. And you forget, when you grow up, you forget every teacher that ever said anything wonderful to you, but you remember the name of the teacher. You remember the time and the date when that teacher said the negative things. God takes our lives, and he begins to say to us, you are going to be all right. And when I was lying face down on the carpet in Mahia, Texas, and my life, I felt, was really over. I felt nothing I had done in the previous years would ever be remembered, and nothing would ever come of my life from that time. Why didn't I take my life? Why didn't I just find a hole, crawl into it, and pull the dirt in over me and quit? Why didn't I give up? I didn't, because of these three factors. And the first factor is God. In my childhood, my father was a minister. And I had a very fundamental background. And every Wednesday night, my father would have Wednesday night testimony time. Wednesday night prayer meeting with testimonies. And every Wednesday night, some dreadful looking lady would stand up and she would say to the entire congregation, and it was the same speech each Wednesday night, I have the joy of the Lord down in my heart. And I used to think, way down, baby, way, way down. And I began thinking when I was about 7 or 8 years of age, I'll be a Christian when I grow up. I'm not going to be one of those. I'm not going to look like death warmed over with lots and lots of white face powder and nothing else. It was preached against. Lipstick and, well, he called it lip rouge. Lip rouge was preached against in my father's church because you painted barns. You did not paint your faces. And and this lady looking like death warmed over would stand and say this each week. And then there was other people that would stand. And again, they would give the same testimony. They would tell about an experience this past week that they had to make a decision on. And they didn't know what to do about it, and they didn't know how to handle it. And so they picked up their Bible, and they held it up, and they said, God, show me the answer. And they opened it up, and there it was. And I thought, get a grip. Get a grip. You know, How can you say that? And it happened every Wednesday. And I ridiculed that in my childhood and thought it was the funniest thing I've ever seen, because it was the same testimony and it was sort of one-upmanship. You tried to outdo the other one that talked first, you know, and it was fun. To me, it was fun. It also set my mind that when I got to be of age, I would be a nice girl. I would be a good Christian woman. But I wouldn't go along with all this falderal, this phony singing that I kept hearing. The phoniness of it was just amazing. And I said, I won't have a part of that. But I'm in Mahia, Texas now. It's the middle of 1980s. I've just gone through a divorce. I've been let go from 7 of my 9 publishing companies. And I have no life out there. You know the phrase, get a life. I didn't have one to get. And I'm lying there. And when I get up, I accidentally knock my Bible off the table. I had it there for purposes of show. And I knocked it off, and it fell down, and it opened up. And a flashback happened to me. I could see this man standing, and I didn't know what to do, so I opened my Bible, and there was the answer. And I bent down to pick up the Bible, and it was as if somehow, magically, the words were sparkling, or they were neon. They were in neon. And I picked the Bible up, and I read what I saw. And I could only read those few lines. It was the last part of Romans 8, and it said, nothing separates me from the love of Christ. Nothing. Not death. Not life. Not angels won't. Powers won't. It says, no matter how high we are in the sky or how low we are in the deepest of oceans, nothing separates me from the love of Christ. And in the margin of my Bible, it says, not even divorce. Of course, I penned that in myself, you understand.